What's your
quiet.
Blog Talk Radio.
Where's the music? Come on! Here on October 7th, 2009. Now, I don't have much to say in my introduction, so I'm just going to talk about two people who surprised me this week. I actually gave a title for this section, but it was offensive. I took it out. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but the first is my good friend, Lance Haun. Lance Haun. In case you can't spell it, H-A-U-N. I don't expect much from a guy named Lancelot. That's obviously his full name. But this guy used to impress me. From the very start, as soon as I met him, I said, hey, here's a young guy who's wise beyond his years. He's wise beyond his years, and he managed to establish himself, calm down, as one of the leading HR guys online in a fairly short time. And he got himself a pretty good address, domain name, address, URL. I don't know what you guys know. He got a good address for his website. It was called yourhrguy.com. That's not bad, is it? But now he goes and changes it to rehaul.com. Rehaul.com. I don't know what it means. There's no definition online. You put it in Google and try to find it. I thought maybe he moved into the automotive industry, but no. He says he picked it because he wants to talk about different things, not just HR anymore. And one of the examples he gives is booth girls at trade shows. That's okay with me. If he's smart, he'll put up pictures of them every day on his new blog. But I don't think he's smart anymore. Rehaul.com. Let's see what happens to him. Now, the other person I'm going to talk about is someone I don't really know that well, but I like to wrestle with her. Her name is at Tori Johnson. And the other day, Tori posted this on Twitter. She said, advice from a billionaire. Learn to sell by taking a job that pays straight commission. And I said, Tori, honey, that's wonderful advice. The only problem is most people aren't born to sell. So she says, well, animal, I'm just saying that instead of waiting around for a cushy job, these guys can get out and make some big bucks selling. And I said, hey, Tori, maybe you didn't hear me. You can't make big bucks if you're a round peg in a square hole. And I'm almost done. She says, she doesn't give up easy. She says, animal, everybody should learn to sell because it's great training for life in general. Now, how can you argue with that? I know they've got, courses where they teach you how to sell. But I used to have a client, and he said to me, animal, you can teach a monkey to sing, but I'm not going to pay him. And did you happen to notice that a straight commission job doesn't pay anything? So what does that tell you? Who do they expect to hire and how successful do they expect them to be? I'm going to ask that question of my guest today. His name is Paul Paris, like the city. He's a tough guy from New Jersey who left a comfortable life as a VP of something. I can't figure out what to become a recruiter. On a straight commission. Now I know this guy's in his car on the way to Madison, Wisconsin, but Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show!
I just called to say I love you.
That doesn't belong. Gary, I don't like that song, but thank you for screaming in your car. Paul Paris, are you there?
The time.
Paul Paris, are you there?
I am here, animal.
Now let me know, are you a monkey?
Am I a monkey?
Yeah, I mean, you quit a job. You quit a job that was paying you a salary to go into straight commission. Did you make money?
I made lots of money. More money
you
than
went
I
into straight
made.
Commission as a recruiter. Am I right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. No, who's got the background noise there? Jerry, is that you?
No.
I'll forgive it if it's you. Close the window,
it's
though. I don't want to hear the wind in my ear.
I'm not stupid.
Okay, Paul, back to you. Listen, you moved from VP of what? What was your title?
I was a VP of corporate actions working for a large financial company.
VP of corporate actions. You know, it means nothing to a normal person. It's just a name. Okay,
right.
But you went into recruiting. Why did you move into a straight commission job? You started working for yourself immediately. Am I right?
Yes, I was mentored along the first couple of months by someone.
Yeah, I was mentored along. Oh, you know what? I forgot something. Where is it? Gee whiz. Sorry, Paul.
Not a
sorry.
Problem.
Sorry. What is it? Is that what music you like? Hold on. I screwed up the music today. Sorry. Sorry, Paul. I forgot. It's going to stop in a minute. I can't stop it. Okay, there it goes. Okay, until I heard your accent, I forgot that I prepared all kinds of special stuff for you.
I would have known I would have sent a bottle of vino, no problem.
I would have sent a bottle of vino. Okay, so now you tell me, how did you make money when you went straight into recruiting for yourself on commission after being a VP? Why did you do it? How were you successful?
I did it because I, after 20 years of being in the financial industry, wanted to do something different, was always interested in recruiting, did a lot of interviewing while I was in the financial services field for various areas.
Okay. So that's it. You did a lot of interviewing, right?
Correct.
You interviewed a lot of people. So that's one. You said you were interested in recruiting. What does that mean?
I always had an interest. I enjoyed talking to different people. I enjoyed the networking aspect of
it. Now, let me ask you something. I got to ask you. Did your accent hurt you? I enjoyed talking to different people.
Absolutely not. Most people on the East Coast talk like this.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mike Raymer doesn't talk like you. Mike Raymer doesn't talk like you, and he lives. Okay. He might be on the line now. He lives around the corner, as far as I can understand.
Well,
you know what? Cliff Mintz talks a little like that. Anyway, okay, I won't bug you. Let's just keep going. So you were interested in recruiting. We don't know in what way, but you did interview a lot of people, right?
Did a lot.
What's
of
a lot?
Right.
What's a lot? How many people a year or a month or did you interview?
It would depend on the projects that we were running for the various areas that I was oversaw during my
yeah,
time.
Can you try, you know what, that doesn't mean anything. Try to give us a figure.
I'll say 100 people a month, okay?
100 a month? Does anyone believe that? Hey, there's a lot of people here. Just chime in. Anybody believe that? No.
Yes.
Hey, who said yes?
I do.
Who are you?
It was Jerry? Jerry Albright. I believe it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you calling him a liar?
I'm saying he's forgetting because 100 people. How long is an interview, Paul?
Depending on what the position is, depending on how good well the interview goes, it could last anywhere 30 minutes, an hour.
Yeah, 100 hours. So
interviews.
That's like you spent half a month doing interviewing time. Am I right? And preparing for the interviews, right?
I worked in areas where we didn't work from 9 to 5. We worked 8 in the morning until sometimes midnight.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I know why you left the business. Okay. You know what? Just let's say hello to a few people. Maureen, are you here today? Maureen. Money, honey. She's not answering. Jeff Lipschultz is here to take her place. Jerry Jeff, are you here?
I'm here, animal. Good morning.
Okay, good. You're the money, honey, today, okay? When I don't ask him the money questions, just jump in there, okay?
Oh, you got it.
Anybody want to say hi? 817, area code 817. Is that you, Paul?
No.
No.
817,
okay,
that's me.
That's
animal.
You, Jerry Jeff. Okay, we're done with the introductions. Okay, Paul, so you were doing a heavy load of interviewing. And did you say, hey, I'm spending so much time interviewing my own staff, I'm sure I could do this on the outside. Was that what you were thinking?
That plus the fact that I had a lot of contacts at various financial firms and financial services.
You were well-connected in your industry, the financial services industry, right?
Yes.
And so then you said, I'm working till midnight every day. I can just interview my own people and supply them to my own company and others in the business. Is that what you said?
In a way, yes.
Okay, well, what do you mean by in a way? Don't make me drag it out, really. You know?
It got to a point where, you know, I decided that it came a point where I wanted to work for myself.
You know, Paul, let me answer the question for you. You had a hard time at work. You faced all kinds of nasty people. Am I right? In your non-recruiting life, you succeeded against all odds. Here's what you wrote on your blog. If I have to quote it back to you, I will. I worked in a large firm, and after 2 years, I found out that I was a threat to some of the bosses. I ran across every situation you could imagine, from bosses who knew everything, people who stole your ideas and made them their own, to other guys who just got in the way in every way imaginable. Is that what you said?
I absolutely did.
Okay. Is that standard in the corporate world, or are you just unique that, you know, the gods didn't like you?
Absolutely not. It happens in every type of company and every type of field of work.
Okay. And your conclusion, I just want to go aside for a second. Your advice to the average guy is never give up. You know, people leave a company they like because they don't like the people in it. But you say don't do that. Do what you do. Let them kick you around so you get your chance to move forward again. Am I right?
It also says in my blog that if they feel that the company that they're with is the right company, however, there are people that are standing in their way, not to just give up because of them people, because more times than not, then people are going to could possibly
You know, Paul,
walk
I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble hearing you. Can everybody else hear Paul? Paul, are you wearing a headset?
Yes.
Paul, are you wearing a headset?
Okay. I can hear him okay, but I got lost on that last one.
Paul, are you wearing a headset?
I can hear him just fine.
Okay. Is that Carl? Well, that's Jerry out in the truck. Now,
Jerry.
Hold on a second. Paul, are you wearing a headset?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Are you talking into the receiver?
No, I'm holding it upside down, animal.
I can hear
you. On a last question.
Animal,
are you on a landline? Are
animal,
you
yeah,
on a landline?
I'm on a landline.
We're going to buy a new phone for you because yours sucks.
No
yeah, animal,
way.
Gonna,
I am right. You guys are wrong.
Hey,
I'm on a different line.
I can hear
him.
We can hear Paul just fine. We can hear Paul.
I'm on the same line we talked Sunday, and you had no problem hearing anything I said. So.
Yeah, but no, it's not the same line. You're calling through to the show. Sorry, pal.
Okay.
So listen, let's move ahead. Paul, I'm going to ask the question for the money, honey, since she's so quiet today, okay?
Absolutely.
Now you claim that for the first 5 years in your own recruiting business, you billed $1.5 million per year?
Absolutely.
Five years, $1.5 million
a year. Including the first, what was the average for the first year? What was the total for the first year?
First year was, 1.27 million.
1.27 million
nice.
In the first year.
Holy
yep.
crap. And you were working on your own. You were working by yourself?
That was my personal billing.
What year was that?
Late 90s. I was 90s. Left 95, open 96.
Time to play the Godfather music again, animal.
No shit.
Respect.
It's a very. Yeah.
I got every version of the Godfather.
Let me explain something to you. It's not a hard number to accomplish if you go into financial advisor recruiting. And with financial advisor recruiting, you get paid 6% of a broker or a financial advisor's trailing 12, which is what their business is on a yearly basis. So if you find a financial advisor that you get to move from, let's say, Merrill Lynch to Morgan Stanley, and they're doing $2 million a year in production, which is what you're going to get paid on, 6% of that $2 million is $121,000 for one placement, $120,000 for one placement.
And
so,
the good news is those guys move around a lot, right?
Absolutely not.
No?
Absolutely not. Financial advisors do not move around a lot. There's too many issues with getting them to move as far as product services. A lot of them take what's called upfront money because a company like Merrill Lynch might offer them 100% of their commission as an upfront check for them to sign on and come on board. So they're not going to leave because they have to repay that money that easily. They're under contract for that time. If they leave before their contract, they have to repay that money.
So if they're so hard to move around, how is it that you're able to place so many?
Now, these guys, Jeff's got a good question, but I want to ask. So these guys are really stock salespeople. Is that what you're talking about? Or salespeople for financial services, and you didn't take a flat rate or part of a base. You took part of their commission as your fee. Is that right?
The industry
right now and back then paid between 5 and 6% of what's called the financial advisor's trailing 12. It's what their production numbers were for the prior 12 months.
A financial advisor, though, is a salesperson and a consultant for financial services, like a stock salesman. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay, and so they had their production was really sales figures, the amount of money they got people to invest in your in the client company, and you took a percentage of their commission, but not from them, but from the company, right?
Your fee was based on their commission. Right. So if you were recruiting, let's say, a customer service rep getting a 25% commission for whatever their salary is for a year, because a financial advisor doesn't have a salary, you will get paid a 5 or 6% commission on what their production numbers were and what the revenue they generated over the last 12 months.
Now, was that standard already, or did you bring that in? Was that standard in your business?
That was standard in financial recruiting of financial advisors, and it's still
okay,
standard now.
You said it's hard to move these guys because they might get paid up front, like an advance of some sort or a signing fee, a bonus, and you told me that the different companies involved, they sell different services or financial instruments, and these guys only have specialization in certain fields and not others. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, just a couple of more questions about this stuff, and I want to throw it open to the guys. Harry F. Joyner is here, hasn't been here for a long time. He's going to skewer you, I hope, because I don't know anything about it. So you told me as well that you cannot source these guys directly. Tell us how you source them. It's very interesting.
Well, you can't. It's not that you can't source them by. You're not going to find them on the internet. If there's a financial advisor that's on the internet, they already lost their book of business because. As soon as someone like Bank America knows that a financial advisor is going to leave, they have every other financial advisor in the office calling their client saying, hey, you know what, it's our company that made you this money, not Joe Schmo. So, you know, we can provide you with the same quality of service by you staying on with us and not going with them.
It's like Jerry Maguire when he decides to leave. Is that it, when they kick
Absolutely.
Him out?
Yeah. So
okay.
what happens is they usually – Well, the only way you're going to find these people is by cold calling. You buy lists from various companies that are out there that sell financial advisor lists, and you do a lot of cold calling. You do a lot of networking at different events that they might have open houses and just passing out business cards, going to attending different functions that they're at, and trying to build up a network and a comfort level for these people to start talking to you. And you kind of approach it as, you know, when you go into it like everything else, you have a company that's looking for financial advisors. Do they know of anybody that may be interested in making a move? And then basically building up a network.
Listen, everybody, Job Search Coach, he's asking me to announce for people to post on Twitter comments, hashtag recruiting animal. I like it when they do at Recruiting Animal. It's easy for me to see it, okay? So at Recruiting Animal, if you want to ask a question of Paul online. Just one last question for me there. How much do those lists cost? You want to tell us? You don't have to. Maureen, how come you didn't ask them already?
I'm waiting for you to stop.
You just jump in. How much? I told Jerry Jeff, if you're not there, just butt in. How much?
The lists are inexpensive. Depending on the size of the list that you buy, you can buy names for 30 cents a name, 25 cents a name. It depends on the quantity of names you're buying. If you're buying an entire region, if you're just buying a certain zip code, if you're just buying a certain state. So they're sold in like that.
And how live are those names?
They're updated once a quarter.
And how do those guys get the names?
they go through various websites like NASD, where any financial advisor that's licensed Series 7, 63, 24, Series 8, they're all out on the NASD website.
You know, it sounds like Broadlook could pull those guys off. I'm going to give it to the people. One question before I forget, and you can answer later. Why did these guys move? It sounds like they had a heavy investment in their current firms. I'd like to know why they moved. But first, I'm going to give Harry F. Joyner, the marketingheadhunter.com, first question. He hasn't been here in a long time.
Can you hear me?
You don't have a question.
No, I
can
do.
Hear
actually,
you.
No, the question that you were going to ask is a good question. Well, like, what would compel them to leave? Based on what I know about the industry, this sounds shallow, but is it hatred of their current sales manager?
It could be a dislike of the branch manager there. It could be the fact that somebody left, and let's say, you know, Jerry Albright's a financial advisor, he's sitting at Merrill Lynch, he decides to leave and go out of the business, and the branch manager, you have seniority over five or six other people out of there, and the branch manager splits up Jerry's accounts and gives the junior people more of the accounts than you, and you're like, you take offense to that, because obviously every dollar that you generate is money in your pocket. So they a dislike to that. They might be their payouts might be getting decreasing on certain things, so that they decide that maybe if I go someplace else, I can get a higher payout of products and services that I offer to clients. Some of them just move because they fulfilled their contract and they need that upfront check. You know, if you're doing $1 million worth of business and you're at, let's say, Bank of America, and Wachovia turns around and says, we'll give you 150% of your trailing 12 if you come here and sign a contract and bring your clients. Well, you know, that $1.5 million upfront check that they're going to hand you when you walk in the door is awfully tempting for you to make a move.
Is there a minimum number of clients that have to defect in order for that?
What they try, if you do your due diligence and you're a good financial advisor, you're not going to make a move unless you know that your top 25 to 50, or I would more like 25 to 30 top clients are going to move with you, and they're not with. If you're a financial advisor that your clients are with you because of the company you're with and not because of you, then you're going to be with that company forever because they're never going anywhere with you. But if you're a financial advisor who feels comfortable that my clients are with me because of me and what I do, and the return on their money that they get that I give them, then they usually will.
Yeah, it's just getting boring. It's getting boring to me.
But
I mean, like, come on.
No, man. It's all about the Benjamins, right? It's all about the Benjamins, period.
Dude, this guy's great, Animal. He's probably one of your top 10 big hits in the staffing industry that's been on your show. Let him roll. I love it.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay.
You're beating up on
that.
Let him finish.
Okay.
To make a long story short, if your top clients are going to leave with you and to move to another company, you're going to do that due diligence before you start looking and say, you know, I'm thinking about moving to, let's just say, Raymond James on an independent platform. And, well, you know, I could offer you the same products or services or better products and services than you're getting right now. Will you be willing to go with me? And if they say yeah and they have a commitment from their top clients, they're going to move. As long as they have nothing holding them from moving, like owing a lot of money or still a contract.
Yeah, but don't great salespeople really have the ability to take their people with them? You buy from the salesperson, not from the company.
You do, but then again, if you get a lot of these people that go into, here, I'll give you a for instance. When Merrill Lynch was around, they had what was called a POA program, which was a Path of Achievement program, where people coming out of school went into and basically to become financial advisors. They trained you at being advisors. Everything and every client that you obtained during them 2 years of training were getting paid a salary for the first year. The second year, you would start going off your salary onto a commission. However, because you went there right from school and they trained you and you used all of their services and things to obtain your business, that business was really not yours to take with you.
Mm-hmm.
I got a question.
How does that work? What, there's the... there's some sort of a contract that says you can't take your clients with you?
They sign a contract saying that any clients that they obtain...
Janice has a question.
Program.
Janice has a question.
Well, then they're not going anywhere.
Wait a second. Now, time out. In recruiting animals...
Obviously, they do, Maureen.
Sit tight. All right. So my question is, you know, aren't most states right-to-work states? And that sounds like indentured servitude.
Yeah.
You can't take your clients with you if you leave us, you're out of the business, et cetera. Well, what if, you know, your sales manager is a complete idiot and, you know, it's a toxic work environment and you have no choice but to leave? They can't prevent you from taking your
Yes,
client.
They can. Is that Harry?
Sure they can.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Harry, how are you?
I'm on. How are you doing?
It's Carl. I know what you're talking about, and MRI does the same thing. They're a nationwide company. They make you sign the same kind of non-compete. You can't take your clients. They belong to us, blah, blah, blah.
I beat
Georgia.
Okay, I beat my non-compete like a drum.
So did I.
I did, too, because it was too broad.
Right.
However, most big companies that are smart don't write up non-competes that are non-enforceable. They don't write them so broad and with such geographic breadth that the court would hold that it interferes with your right to earn a living.
Right.
So I'm sure that, you know, Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch are smart enough to write a non-compete that could screw you down to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you exactly the way they do it. What they do is they write a non-compete, and if you try to leave and you go someplace else and you try to take the clients with you, what they do is they immediately go in and hit you with an injunction. The injunction stops you from dealing with any of the clients that you obtained while you were with that company. Then from that point on, you can start drumming up new business and work as a financial advisor on your own looking for new business. However, you can't do anything to service the clients that you had prior while an injunction is in place. So what happens is now they have all the financial advisors with the company that you left dealing with these clients, and the clients are not going to, like, sit back and say, well, you know what, this stock just went up 10 points, but I'm not going to do anything because Harry's at another company and he can't trade it for me and he was my old financial advisor. They're going to be like, I got to do what I got to do for me.
All right, time out, though. Well, what happens if the client says, look, I've got a relationship with Harry and I'm leaving. I don't want to do business with Merrill Lynch anymore.
That's
okay?
Fine.
Then if the client says, look, I'm defecting, and it's my decision proactively to follow Harry over to Company X, A.G. Edwards, then Merrill Lynch can't do anything, correct?
Absolutely not. It's
so
that's an easy out.
All right. So this
is
a little like the recruiting business. So if you're a financial planner and you have a high degree of expertise and a lot of charisma and magnetism and you've got a great personal relationship with the client, then they'll follow you. They just won't they? Because they're friends at that point, not necessarily clients. Correct?
But I got a question.
Go ahead.
It's Janice Worthington at Career Code, at Exec Job Code. Sorry. Here's my question. Okay, because I've got a financial advisor at Merrill, and I've had situations where one's with Dean Witter, then they go to Morgan Stanley, then they go to Wachovia. They make all kinds of changes. You know, my money's volatile enough with these guys, okay? I worry about somebody who changes too much, just like in the job market. Isn't that something that is going to affect how many people you can place?
If a financial advisor is serious about their business and they're good at what they do, they usually don't make a lot of moves unless they really need the upfront money themselves because, you know, their book of business might have dwindled because of some bad investments they made or whatever else, so they're looking to make a move. Some companies have made it that, like a UBS Payne Webber right now, if you don't have a book of business of at least $500,000 in production a year, you can't even work for UBS Payne Webber. If you're not doing $750,000 a year in business in production, you can't even work for Wells Fargo.
Okay, it goes back to my original question then. If they don't move around a lot, then how do you make a lot of money on moving these guys around a lot?
How do you
make millions of dollars?
If you move, once you move, it's to get the first couple of people to move, you're always going to get, if you move and you move them into a good situation, you're going to get referrals every time they know somebody that moves.
That's why Paul made $1 million a year doing it, because he made it happen.
Yeah, I mean, by my calculation here, if he gets 6% of someone's trailing 12-month income, right, then
wait, you're going to do a calculation how many he placed? Why don't we just ask him how many he placed? So all that money you're talking about, how many people are you placing a year?
You're probably talking somewhere between 10 to 15 advisors a year to make that type of money.
So about one a month.
That's
about one a month.
And they're, yeah. these aren't even that big of producers, because a million is 6% of a little bit less than $17 million, right? So the 15 guys that you place collectively would have to have $17 million under management, which is doesn't even make them that big of producers.
No, if you're a $2 million producer, if you're doing $2 million in production, that means that you have to have $200 million in assets, what they call assets under management. So you have to have clients that have a total asset value of $200 million because your production is usually 10% of what your assets under management is.
So Last question for you.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Are you targeting then these candidates that are high producers then? I mean, are you ferreting them out? Are you disregarding the low producers then?
Absolutely not. And the market is basically giving you what you're targeting because the financial services companies keep raising what their minimum requirements for a financial advisor to be doing to work for them is.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're trusting, I mean, you can go work as an independent financial advisor where you pay all your own expenses, you have your own office, you hang up your own name on a door and everything else, like working for a company like Raymond James or AIG or Linsco Private Ledger LPL. And you could be doing just $200,000 a year in production.
So this is a pretty high stakes thing then. You're targeting really great producers, yet it's those same producers that if they leave, they won't be able to take their book of business with them unless they get sued or hassled by their current employer. Is that correct?
Unless the client says, I want to go with you.
Unless the client says,
that's the out. If you can get all your people that are with you, because I'm one of those little people to say, pay Merrill Lynch, right?
No, you're misunderstanding.
Here's what happens. When you go in a training program, any clients you obtain during that training program are really clients of the company that you're with. Once you go on to a 100% commission basis, from that point on, any clients that you obtain from that point on are yours.
That's an important piece of information.
Okay, listen. I don't want to cut anybody off, but people are hanging up. They don't like these long discussions. Okay.
I want to know about recruiter Rex.
We'll get to that. I just want to finish off. So what do you do? What do you call? How do you cold call someone when you say, all right, my name's Paul Pierce. I got $1 million for you if you're going to move. Is that what you do? What's your cold call?
Well, first of all, it takes a while to get these people on a phone because more times than not, they have their administrative assistants or sales assistants hanging up on you when you try to you basically call and say that you've been referred to them by someone and that you have you're networking with people in the business. You have some good opportunities with some other financial services firms. Do they know of anyone that's interested, or they might be interested themselves, or do they have some time to talk? And
But if you've got a specific position and your client is willing to pay $1 million up front for a new employee, how do you handle that?
I don't know. Anybody, you don't have to have a specific position.
Pete, they're hanging up. I told you. Go ahead. Answer that question.
You don't need a specific position. If I went right now to Merrill Lynch to Bank of America and said I have a $2 million producer that's interested in working for you, they're going to sign a contract with me tomorrow.
I'm asking how you get the $2 million producer on your side when you don't have anything to offer. How do you get that person? What's your cold call? What's your bait?
You have to basically build a trust with these people and start talking to
how?
Them about their
how?
Skills.
How?
By networking with them, by knowing what you're talking about, by presenting them with an opportunity that basically they're going to be able to...
You just said you don't necessarily have to have an opportunity. You build trust, and then you market them somewhere. Isn't that what you just said?
Absolutely.
Well, what do they say? What's the typical response?
You can't move. It's a very simple thing. I'm not going to be able to move a financial advisor. Let's just say if he's selling Avon to a company that only sells Revlon, and it's not compatible with one another. You have to be able to move somebody that's going to be able to go to a company.
Yeah, I just want you to answer my question, and we're going
to
switch gears because we want to talk about your new business. Because even though your background is kind of mysterious, because even though you were making this big money, you didn't stick with it. But first I want to find out, how did you get the guy? You had $1 million in your pocket to pay him up front, sort of key money, Did you mention that money, or did you just do institutional? See, now it sounds like you were doing what Danny Cahill calls institutional recruiting. You call up someone without a job and you without a job order and say, "Hi, I'm Paul Paris. I'd like to get to know you, so when something comes my way, I can let you know about it." Is that what you did?
That's kind of basically the way you got to start out, absolutely.
You mean you didn't have any jobs to start out with? You just recruited the guys.
I had companies that I could present them to that basically said, if you come across producers that are willing to move, we'll talk to them.
What's a typical response by one of these guys?
Most of them will say that they're under contract. They have what's called, in a business, they call them golden handcuffs. That means they took an upfront check and they're still under contract and they have a loan outstanding, so they really can't move unless...
A loan outstanding for what?
Well, if you go...
Like a draw. No.
If you go up to a company and they hand you $1.5 million upfront to move over, there's a condition that you have to do so much in production and... then that loan year by year becomes forgivable less and less.
Yeah, it's like an advance. Okay, let's switch gears. Why did you leave? Because you worked in a bunch of other recruiting companies after 5 years on your own. You went to AIG Royal Alliance as a senior internal recruiter. They weren't paying you $1 million, I'll bet. Then you went to Mellon ACS as a senior recruiter. Then you were at Aon Consulting as a senior recruiter. Why? Come on, you got to tell us.
Why? Because I didn't need the money. I was doing it. I enjoyed it. I went to the corporate side of the business, and I wanted to try something different. AIG had something that was an interesting concept where it was recruiting of financial advisors for a semi-independent platform. I thought it was interesting. It was a great opportunity for advisors. It was easy to get them to move over, so I went there and spent some time there.
And they were paying you $1 million a year?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so let's move to your new position, your new business. You were at your name.
Finally.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. How many people on this phone call could say that they were hired by a CEO of one of the largest financial companies in the world three times?
Okay.
I was
twice,
but not three times.
Okay.
Play the Godfather music again.
Yeah,
okay.
How many people, you know, I let you guys run the show. Jerry, you said he was the most interesting guest ever, so I let you guys run the show.
No, I didn't. No, I said in the top 10. But secondly, Paul, I understand what it is that you're saying you did. I get it. Obviously, other people on this phone call don't.
Me?
So I do get it.
Okay.
It makes sense to me. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Great. But yeah,
Call me later.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think your career path is totally mysterious. I won't make you confess everything right now. If we have time at the end of the show, we'll go back to that. But you left. First, you were making tons of money on your own. Then you went into corporate life. And then you left it. Now your name is Paul Paris on Twitter. It's at Paris22, and your company is called Recruiter Rex. Now, I think that's hard to spell. I think it's an example of bad branding, but I will spell it now. It's Recruiter, R-E-Q-S. So Recruiter Rex, R-E-Q-S. Am I right?
Yes, you are.
Now, does anybody ever have trouble spelling that?
I bet they do.
No answer.
I don't know how it's spelled. Is
it R-E-Q-S? R-E-Q-S is that's what they call it internally their job orders, Rex. So what is Recruiter Rex, and why did you start it?
Recruiter Rex was a job board that we had a concept to build. Basically, what it is it gives an employer an opportunity to go out and post jobs and not pay your typical fee to your typical outside agency fee.
Yeah, it's like a networking site for recruiters and employers like Bounty Jobs, which we all are mostly familiar
with.
Well,
it's not like Bounty. Okay, it's similar to a Bounty Jobs. The big difference is the recruiter is the one that puts the fee or submits a private bid of the fee they're willing to charge an employer to fill a position. So it's not like where Bounty Jobs, an employer goes out and posts the job and says, we're going to pay 30% fee for this. And you got 9,000 recruiters that recruit for it. It's basically where an employer goes out, posts a job out there, and then recruiters who are members of the site will bid on and send a fee to a client they're willing to work that job for.
Anybody got a question for him?
No. Now they don't have questions when I want
them
to ask questions.
Keep describing it.
What
listening.
Else is there to say?
How successful has it been?
How
successful has it been so far?
It's a simple thing. What happens is the employer then has the opportunity. They receive these bids. They review the profile that the recruiter sets up in the database, and then they decide based upon the budget that they have and the recruiter's profile and their specialties who the recruiters are they wish to work with. And
so it's like a lineup of recruiters. It's a LinkedIn of recruiters only, kind of. Is that it?
The only ones that are going to be paid members are going to be recruiters, yes.
Well,
how much does this cost? Hey, Animal, how much does this cost for a recruiter?
There's three packages. One is a month-to-month, which is $500 a month if you go month-to-month. The other one is $375 a month if you do a yearly contract and $450 a month if you do a semi-annual contract. And that's all you pay. Where on Bounty Jobs, although you don't have to pay anything up front, you pay 25% for every placement. They withhold 25% on every placement that you do. So
anybody got a question?
Me as a recruiter, I would rather go into the year knowing if I sign a yearly contract, I pay $4,250, and every placement I do above and beyond getting that back is profit.
And how,
anybody
and
got
how
something
recruiters...
to say?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'd like to hear about a particularly bloody carpet placement.
Huh?
What?
A particularly difficult placement. This sounds like a real pull and teeth business. What you're in the going back to the financial placement.
No, let's enough with the financial. You guys ran the show for a half an hour. I lost all my listeners. Now we're going to talk about this. If someone has something,
you don't
to
want
say,
to talk about blood on the carpets. I thought that was your thing.
No, that was the chance before.
Oh, bloodletting. That's what you want to talk about. Okay.
Well, he's a thug. We know that already. Okay. But let's talk about something. Paul, what do you want to say about your business? Why should somebody sign up with you? You just said it, right? Is that it? What's your elevator?
I mean, we've built a network where we have recruiterx.com, which gives there's a lot of good independent recruiting talent that's out there that doesn't have the marketing dollars or the contacts to be able to sell their services, and this is an opportunity for them to work with companies that they may not have had a chance to before.
To showcase. Now, are they going to end up taking less in the way of fees? Are the fees reduced?
They're the ones that are going to decide on what the fee is going to be. I mean, they're
yeah,
the
well, how's it been working? How's it been working? How's it been working?
How many clients are currently involved with this, Paul?
There's probably somewhere around 100 clients that.
How many jobs? How many jobs are on there right now for recruiters to go after?
There's not many jobs because the jobs you'll never see a lot of jobs out there because the way the job board works is once a client posts jobs and they receive on the number of bids they're looking to get from a recruiter, they'll take the and decide on what recruiters they're going to work for. They're going to immediately take the jobs down so that they don't get any more bids from.
But do you get some kind of notification, I guess, whenever a job gets posted since they get closed?
Yeah, we built it that you have the ability to register on a site. We don't want anybody paying money for jobs that or to bid on jobs that are not in their specialty. So you have the ability to register on the site and set up an alert so that when jobs in your specialty are posted, you're automatically notified. And from that point forward, you can start paying your membership fee, whether it be monthly, semi-annually, or annually.
Oh, so you don't even have to start paying until something's in there that would interest you?
Correct.
So
we give you the opportunity to register first.
Interesting.
Why don't you say that up front? It makes a difference. What's your elevator speech? If I met you at a party and I said, what do you do?
I host a network of job boards and of two job boards and a social network, which helps employers save money. Recruiters work with companies they didn't have an opportunity before and add money to their bottom line revenue and have a social network that's for job seekers only to help them find
jobs. Yeah, you lost
jobs.
Me already. You lost me at hello. Hey, is that good? You lost me at hello? I'm sure it's been said a million times.
I lost you on Sunday when we talked, so I mean that
was... No. Here's what you should say. You should say, I run an employer recruiter social network. And then, that's nice and short, it's kind of comprehensible. Someone will ask you a follow-up question. Does anybody agree with me? No. Okay, next question. Yesterday, I spoke on Jason Alba's show to the great Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a social media star. He says he has 100,000 people every day listening to his show, which includes video, not just audio. And he told me, the recruiting animal, that he spends 45 minutes a day working on his content and 14 hours a day working on networking, or he did at least when he was building himself up to his current superstar status.
Paul, he called it community. He called it community, right?
Whatever, I don't know, but he said what I just said. Don't correct me. Paul, you are in a social media business. How much time, how do you divide your time? How do you build your business?
I build my business by calling, a lot of cold calling, talking to clients, talking.
To who? Give us an example. Who are you calling?
A lot of financial companies, medical companies, pharmaceutical companies.
And who do you talk to there?
To the receptionist. No, I talk to the recruiting department a lot of times, the HR managers and so
on. And what do you say, Paul? Well, I'll pull it out of you. What do you say?
Have an opportunity. We have a job board that has an opportunity for you as an employer to save money on your bottom line while working with outside recruiters. If your company is interested, give me a call back. If not, and I forward them an email because I do a lot of
research. That's your voicemail message. That canned message is not what you say to someone who's live on the line. Am I right?
Right. If they're live on the line, I start talking about them, give them the website and everything else.
Yeah, and so it goes. And so, what do you try to get them signed up right away? What happens?
Well, it's they can sign up. I mean, for an employer, it's free. So most employers don't walk away and say, "No, we won't give it a shot." One of the big issues right now is that they look at it as, "Hey, this is a great opportunity. If I have $100,000 to $150,000 job, because if I even say 5% of $150,000 or 5% on $100,000, that's $5,000 I'm saving on that." And what we're trying to get the point across is, and I just hired a couple of people to do some business development, is that you can save money on any job that you put on here because recruiters are going to bid and you're probably going to pay less than you would be paying.
Hold on, you said recruiters aren't bidding. The recruiters put out their shingle, essentially, and these guys come in and pick a recruiter from the lineup. Am I right or wrong?
You're wrong.
Didn't he say that?
They do bid on it, but it is a lineup. You're both right. But they do.
Okay.
The recruiters are all putting their different fees out there, and they pick the one they want to go with.
The employer has the opportunity to work with 1 to 5 recruiters.
Oh, you can work with
one
job?
One.
There you go.
On one job. Okay.
On one job. Depending on how quickly they want to fill a job, they can work for 1 to 5 recruits.
Okay, so
you
find I come
out
in.
A lot.
Hey, guys. I've enjoyed the show, but I got to take off. I got a lunch appointment. It's a quarter
till.
I'm
eating?
On time.
Jerry, what
I'm
are you
Madison.
Eating?
I don't know. I want to find an Indian place.
I don't know about that.
I guess there is one. I'm going to drive around until I find it. But Paul,
okay.
You're fantastic. You're the best ever. Bye, everybody.
What's wrong with Jerry today? You're the best ever.
What's wrong with me?
He doesn't usually say stuff like that. Yeah.
Hey, Paul is possibly one of my new idols. The guy fills millions. I love it. It's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
And you guys
okay.
were wondering how he makes a phone call? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's anything unique about his calls to me. They sound canned.
Imagine that.
Paul,
see you,
listen
Paul.
To this. Paul, yep. Thanks, Jer. Paul, I lost my tooth. Not the front tooth, but the tooth over to the side. If I don't
again
replace
with
it.
The tooth.
If I go out to a meeting, do you think that will make people lose confidence in me? Because obviously, you know, you got an accent like a guy who doesn't have a tooth, and it doesn't hurt you.
Hey, you know, do whatever is best, but you should be able to go to any carpenter to make you a tooth very easily. So.
Okay.
Get your tooth fixed.
Okay.
That sounds a little bit like Rocky Balboa. That was a little bit like Rocky right there.
Paul, just once. Yeah, Paul, have you had any complaints from the people who were using, either the recruiters or the employers who've used your site so far?
No, because we're very upfront with them. The recruiters appreciate the fact that there is a limited number of recruiters that could work any particular job. They're appreciative of the fact that they can register without having to pay any money up front. The employer is appreciative of the fact that, look, we know that our employer is not going to come to us and just post a job on our job board and if they decide to work with 3 recruiters, they're not going to still go to possibly their preferred vendor list to see if there's other recruiters they want to work with the job on there.
Okay, now you told me a minute ago that you're not really spending that much time promoting yourself on Twitter. Am I right, or social media in generally? Or do you? How much time you content? You write blog pieces?
I write, you know, I'm not really a great blogger, so I don't write a lot of blog pieces. Right now we're in the process of interviewing a couple of people for social media to work for us as a social media guru, if you will.
Yeah.
And also, I just hired two people, and hopefully another coming from Bounty Jobs.
You shouldn't say that online. Don't say that in public. No one's listening, so it doesn't matter.
Well,
but
they're not employed there anymore, so it don't make a difference.
Okay.
Well, then they're not coming.
If I'm a recruiter, what can I expect to be the success rate if I get into this program, Paul? I mean, if you're looking at the guys and gals on there already, what's their fill rate using this process? They expect it for 1 year, 2 years.
How long's it been going? That's
only
a good question.
The website's only been the RecruiterX website was launched in late May of this year.
Well, that's still enough time to get a track record, a trend going. How successful have the recruiters been at filling those jobs, especially when you talk about your clients using other means to fill the jobs too? It's not only competing against each other, but against other, their
the
other
recruiters
means.
So far that have worked it and. Bids were accepted and they worked jobs. I'd say 60% right now we're looking at have been successful.
Of filling one job?
Of filling jobs, various jobs, more than one.
Okay, you need better stats than that, okay?
Yeah,
getting them. Start putting them together.
Put them on your
website.
You're
a number guy. You should be the Harry says numbers don't lie, okay?
Yeah, I'd like some numbers.
Okay, now you've got an employment or job hunting thing going as well, right?
I have a regular job board for recruiters, employers to post positions, and candidates to post resumes, and then we have a social network for job seekers only.
Okay, what's the shtick with that, the job seekers only social
job
network?
Job seekers only is basically where people can sign up.
What's it called,
first
of all? Is it the same name?
It's RecruiterX.com Employment Cafe.
Okay, but they can get it by going to RecruiterX. It's on the front page. Is there a link?
There's links on all three websites to the websites.
Okay, good. Okay, so what does a job hunter get out of going there?
They get the opportunity to network with other people that are unemployed in the same areas of employment that they were in. They get the help of various coaches, resume writers, and so forth that are willing to. What we did was we offered job search coaches, resume writers and so forth, the opportunity to work with these people, and if they give something away once a month free to these people, like maybe have somebody, a resume writer, do a resume for someone for free, or have a job search coach do some interviewing tips or point somebody in the right direction of where to go, because a lot of these people have been out of work for a long time, we let them advertise their business there and whatever other business
for free?
Driven from there.
So if you're a job search coach, I let all the smart guys run my show for the first half hour, and I'm losing all my listeners because my show's not for smart people. It's for people who think like me. In short little bites. Not lengthy discussions about money and stuff like that. They don't understand. They tune out. And you know what
Gary
told me yesterday?
You how to run.
Ask your question. I want to hear your answer.
Go ahead.
you told me yesterday not to tell you how to run your show. I told you that was going to get long-winded.
Yeah, but I let those guys. They sounded like they knew what they were talking about. Okay,
easy
so
to
when
blame
you,
others, animal. So easy to
yeah,
blame
it is.
Others.
Okay, right. Now, okay, so when you got a, if I'm a job search coach or a resume writer, I knock on your door. I send you an email. Paul, I want in on this job hunting cafe. So I'll offer some free services, lost leaders, in the hope that some of these guys will actually hire me. Is that your deal there?
That's what we're doing. Well, we're limiting it to only a couple of resume writers, a couple of job search coaches.
Well,
I like it.
Why'd you set it up in the first place? What inspired you to set this up?
It's just something that, you know what, in the whole scheme of things and in all the conferences that I've attended in the past as a corporate recruiter, as an agency recruiter, you know, the biggest equation that's left out of everything is the candidate. And to me, the candidate is what drives your business. I don't care how many job requisitions you have sitting on your desk. I don't care how many employers you talk to every day. If you leave the candidate out of the equation, then you have nothing.
Yep, we got it. You're right. We're there. You got it.
You have a piece of paper on your desk or a job order on your PC. Your candidates are going to bring you more business than cold calling is going to bring you.
We're there.
Because they talk more than – when I was a corporate recruiter, I didn't never went around and said I used other third-party – I didn't go around and tell other corporate recruiters that we used third-party agencies or who was good and who wasn't. More candidates went out and said, you know what? I work with a great recruiter that just placed me in another job. They go to exit interviews and they're asked, why are you leaving? How did you get the job? They're told through an agency. I've had gotten business when I had an agency through exit interviews where an employer kept seeing candidates leaving through my firm.
That's to get you on their side.
But you know, a good reason why to go with him on this stuff or a coach?
Huh?
I think this is important.
I got a question for like CFO coaches asking, do recruiters get to come in there and talk to job hunters as well?
Absolutely not.
Yes or no?
No.
No. So they can't offer advice, just people like Janice or job search coach, right?
Yes.
Okay, Janice, mm-hmm. You get the last question. We're almost out of time.
It's not a question. We're in with him because he's an industry leader, okay? Just as his clients were in with him, we're in with him too. I think it's a great idea, and I look forward to it.
Well, you want to give him a little more? Give him a little more of a promotion in the last minute. I'll cut it out. You're one of the job search coaches and resume writers who participate with Paul Paris at Paris 22 on RecruiterRex.com. Why do you do it? Why is he an industry leader?
Well, because first of all, from the experience that I've had with social media, okay, and we're all relatively new to it, he's extremely visible, okay? That's number one. No visibility.
Don't say okay? You don't have to say okay.
Oh, sorry about that. All right. Second of all, talk to him. I'm an old dog at this, and I can tell who I'm talking to. Talk to him, like them. He's an industry leader. He knows how to produce. If he knows how to produce,
talk to him like him. He's
to
an industry leader
because
he's an industry. You ever heard the word tautology? You can't use it here. Okay, you like him. I don't think anybody else has anything to say. It's almost over. Any burning questions? No? What about 1-1? There's a few 1-1-1 numbers. I haven't asked them who they are. Do you want to say hi? Do you want to talk to Paul for the next 1 minute? No. Okay.
I have one thing to say. I wanted to know how you enjoyed finally making it into the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, those things, I never laugh at them, okay? Maureen's making movies as well. And Jerry's got a library of recruiting documents on his blog. But
wait, can I say something?
Goodbye!